Good day, and welcome to the SNC-Lavalin's fourth quarter 2018 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Denis Jasmin. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. With me today are Neil Bruce, President and CEO, and Sylvain Girard, Executive Vice President and CFO. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on the investors section of our website. If you are not using today's webcast, please ensure to open the presentation as we will refer to it during this call. The recording of today's call and webcast will also be available on our website within 24 hours. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to draw your attention to slide two of the presentation. Information in this presentation and remarks made by the speakers today will contain statements about expected future events and financial results that are forward-looking and therefore subject to risks and uncertainties. These forward-looking statements represent our expectation as of today and accordingly are subject to change. We disclaim any obligation to update any forward-looking statement except as required by law. A description of the risk factors that may affect future results is contained in the company's MD&A, available on our website and in our filings with the Canadian Securities Administrators. During today's call, we will also discuss certain non-IFRS financial numbers. You can find reconciliation of these numbers with comparable IFRS measures in the presentation and in our MD&A. With that, I will turn the conference over to Neil Bruce. Neil?
Thank you, Denis, and good afternoon, everyone. Instead of me going through the slides, let me cover a few topics before Sylvain covers the financials. First, a quick summary of the 2018 takeaways. I would like to stress that 2018 had its fair share of positive news. Unfortunately, these stories have been completely overshadowed by the unacceptable news regarding one of our mining projects in South America. There have also been headwinds in terms of overall volatility within the oil and gas sector. These headwinds have been amplified by geopolitical issues, which began in August and continued throughout the year, and which are impacting some of our prospects going forward. No doubt these are two important issues. However, I would like to talk about some of the really good work done by the talented people at SNC-Lavalin. First, infrastructure, nuclear, and EDPM are performing well. In fact, EDPM recorded an industry-leading margin of 11.2% in the quarter. Second, in 2018, the company was ranked as the number three international design firm in the world, and we're incredibly proud of our progress on this front. Third, we were the co-chair of the World Economic Forum's Partnership Against Corruption initiative, and I am personally incredibly proud about the work that we do in this arena. As we head for 2019, we are disappointed that we're starting a bit further back for the year than what our original expectations were. We have to note the positives. We have a strong backlog of $14.9 billion. In Q4 of 2018, we booked $2.2 billion of new work and have many really interesting quality prospects. We also gave guidance, which is $2-$2.20 for the adjusted diluted EPS from E&C and $3-$3.20 for the adjusted consolidated diluted EPS. We have a clear capital allocation strategy, and there is no need for us to raise any form of equity. From this perspective, I think there's a lot to look forward to, and there is good news in terms of where we're going in 2019. Let's now talk about the mining and metallurgy project. We are incredibly disappointed with this situation. Ultimately, the project management did not appropriately adhere to the terms and conditions of the contract, and this impacted the overall project forecast. Basically, we made certain commitments within the supply chain prior to getting concurrence on the agreement with our customer. It is an error that exposes the company to the differential between what's agreed with a customer and what we've actually agreed with our supply chain. We've gone through the circumstances in absolute detail, conducted peer reviews, examined risk control mechanisms, changed personnel, added oversight. and double-checked everything, we are certain that this is an isolated case. Ian Edwards, our new COO, and I have met with the customer personally, following further negotiations and discussions, have agreed to settle the dispute through an accelerated arbitration process. We also made the decision that our mining and metallurgy segment will cease to bid on lump sum EPC contracts, and we reinforced our risk controls vigorously internally. There is no known evidence that any similar issues exist on any other projects. We acted quickly and decisively and transparently. We are confident that this is a one-off situation across our business. We expect that anything that we recover over time should come back as a positive contribution. Now, moving to oil and gas. There are a couple of things going on in the oil and gas sector. First, if you look at when we acquired our oil and gas group back in 2014, oil prices were higher than they have been over the last few years. They have picked up a little bit in the last year, but prices remain volatile. Customers are taking a bit longer for project approvals and their capital allocation strategy. Secondly, we are also involved in contracts where there have been large amounts of client changes, and that makes it sometimes difficult to recognize revenue in a specific quarter. And thirdly, we have geopolitical peace. We disclosed back in August the potential effects of the Canadian-Saudi relationship issue. I am confident that this does not affect the work that we do today and the backlog that we currently have in terms of completing the work. But it does place major uncertainty right now into the future prospects. However, we are fully committed to the Saudi market and supporting our valued Saudi customers. When you take the forward-looking prospects and you roll them into our overall accounting and financial models, that's the reason that we took a goodwill impairment within the oil and gas business. A level of uncertainty over forward prospects, this has been built in to our 2019 guidance. That being said, there have been a number of good contract wins and developments in Q4. Our EDPM segment secured a contract with the UK Ministry of Defence as engineering delivery partner for the defence equipment and support as part of the Aurora partnership. Our infrastructure sector implemented an earthquake early warning system on the Canada line in BC. It is the first of its kind in Canada. On the clean power front, the John Hart Generation Station operations have been transferred to the new facility. The new facility has been completed and turned on in Q4. Our oil and gas sector signed an agreement with Perdaman for the development of the Aurora plant in Western Australia. Argentina's Embalse reactor was brought back into service by our nuclear team, marking the end of the life extension project. Now let's talk about the events of the last 2 weeks. This is not easy for me, for the management team, or for any of our dedicated, hardworking employees to see SNC-Lavalin's name in the media repeatedly, as it has been over the last couple of weeks. There are a couple of things I would really like to emphasize. First, I want to categorically say that we have done nothing wrong as a company, and none of our current employees have done anything wrong. We wanted to raise awareness. We have never asked for the charges to be dropped. We have never asked for anything to be circumvented outside the judicial system. Did we ask for the remediation agreement that was enacted by Parliament to be applied in our case? Yes. Without getting into the legal aspects of the details, we believe that ultimately the public interest would be served through a remediation agreement. The remediation agreement is constructed to do two things. One is to help bring individuals to justice, and to make sure that the innocents defined as being employees, the pensioners, the shareholders, the supply chain, are not harmed. At the moment, we believe that exactly the opposite is happening. And I have to ask if this is fundamentally fair. From that perspective, the work that we were doing in terms of meetings, and we have had meetings with opposition parties, both federally and provincially, this was an awareness campaign. We asked why shouldn't the remediation agreement apply to the company, and our position still stands. We believe that a remediation agreement is the right way to take this forward, but we must focus on where we can make a difference. So that is why we're now concentrating solely on defending the company through the courts. We are confident that we will get the right outcome, despite the fact that this will likely end up in a 10-year process. Throughout, we will ensure that we continue to maximize shareholder value and will work to protect our innocent employees and stakeholders. Let me now comment on Ian Edwards' appointment. The appointment of Ian as Chief Operating Officer is something that has been in the works for quite a while. Ian has done a fantastic job of taking on the infrastructure sector when it was having difficulties a few years ago and turned it into a break-even and then ultimately to a profitable sector, all while managing a lot of our large contracts in terms of risk management through execution. We believe that Ian can bring that experience to a wider platform to drive consistent delivery capability across the company. This is another part of our evolution as a company to ensure that we execute projects in a consistent manner, that we look to capitalize on our fantastic employees, and we do not just keep talent within individual sectors. Let me conclude by summarizing our 2019 priorities. These are clearly cash generation, long-term sustainable organic growth in terms of what we bid and execute, and with Ian's appointment, consistent delivery across the whole business, as well as taking on our whole technology and digital offerings to an even greater level. We have done some fantastic work in that area, but we want to make it even bigger part of our business going forward. With that, I'll turn the call over to Sylvain to go over our financial results.
Thank you, Neil, and good afternoon, everyone. I will start on slide 8. Our year-to-date adjusted net income from ENC and the consolidated adjusted net income was in line with our revised guidance issued on February 11, 2019, at $0.25 and $1.31 per diluted share, respectively. As disclosed in our January 28 press release, we have recorded in Q4 a $1.2 billion non-cash goodwill impairment charge relating to the oil and gas segment. Total segment EBIT for Q4 2018 amounted to negative $200 million, as it included a negative segment EBIT of $349 million in mining and metallurgy and a negative segment EBIT of $23 million in oil and gas. The drivers that generated these losses were all previously explained in January 28 and February 11 press releases. The nuclear infrastructure and EDPM segments had a strong quarter with a segment EBIT margin of 16%, 6%, and 11%, respectively. Corporate SG&A expenses amounted to $61 million for the quarter. Note that this amount included $25 million for a guaranteed minimum pension equalization expense for past service costs. This is mainly related to the amendment of the pension formula to equalize benefits for men and women and to adjust for the unequal results produced by the GMP between May 1990 and April 1997. This is the company's preliminary assessment as the ruling rendered in October 2018 by the UK High Court has put forward a range of possible approaches that could be adopted to equalize GMPs. It is left to individual pension plan trustees and employers to determine their preferred approach. Total revenues for Q4 2018 amounted to $2.6 billion, which is lower than Q4 2017. The variation was mainly due to lower revenues in oil and gas due to completion of major projects and in thermal power as we made the strategic decision to exit this market. This was mostly offset by an increase in infrastructure. Our 2018 revenues were composed of 74% of reimbursable and engineering service contracts and 26% of EPC fixed-price contracts, compared to a mix of 72-28 in 2017. Our backlog was at $14.9 billion at the end of the year. Our book-to-bill ratio was at 0.9 in the quarter and 1.1 for the year. Our bookings for the quarter were $2.2 billion, which includes $0.9 billion in EDPM, $0.6 billion in oil and gas, and $0.2 billion in clean power. Our backlog remained heavily weighted in reimbursable and engineering service contracts, with 73% versus 27% for EPC fixed price contracts. And lastly on this slide, In order to strengthen the company's balance sheet, the board of directors has reduced the quarterly dividend by 18.7 cents per share to 10 cents. On an annual basis, this will allow SNC-Lavalin to retain approximately $131 million of cash, which will be used to deleverage the balance sheet and provide the company additional flexibility in the future. Now moving to slide 9. We kept this slide in the presentation to be consistent with previous quarters. I won't spend much time on it. We see the negative segment EBIT in mining metallurgy caused by the $346 million loss on the major EPC project, as well as the negative segment EBIT in oil and gas, while the nuclear and infrastructure segments had a good quarter. The EDPM segment also had a good quarter with an 11% segment EBIT margin. Turning to slide 10. Our operations used $112 million in cash in Q4 2018. On a year-to-date basis, our operations used $304 million in cash, compared to $236 million in 2017. This was mainly driven by a lower EBIT from E&C segments, the cash outflow of $89 million for the class action settlement, and an increase in interest paid, partially offset by a decrease in restructuring costs and income tax paid. The 2018 cash consumption is primarily driven by the closeout of our thermal business on the major EPC challenging project in mining and metallurgy, higher working capital usage in our oil and gas business in the Middle East, and timing and milestone achievement on major projects and infrastructure. Note that a significant cash consumption related to the revised reforecasted costs on the mining project will occur in Q1 and Q2 2019, as we expect this project to be completed towards the end of Q2. Moving to slide 11. We closed the year with $634 million in cash and cash equivalents, $1.7 billion in net recourse debt, and $2.1 billion in unused capacity under our $2.6 billion committed revolving credit facility. The net recourse debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio based on our financial statements was 3.3. While this ratio calculated according with the terms of the company's revolving facility agreement, as amended, was 2.9 times. I remind you that our covenant and ratio calculation with our lenders has been temporarily increased to 4 times, and that the forecasted loss on the mining and metallurgy project is to be considered as a non-recurring item up to a maximum amount of $310 million. Also note that on February 15, DBRS issued a rating report placing the company in the review with negative implications, while S&P on February 12 downgraded the company's rating to BBB- from BBB, but revised its outlook to stable. Now turning to my last slide, slide 12. We've already disclosed our EPS outlook in the February 11, 2019 press release, but we decided to give you additional details such as adjusted EBITDA from ENC and expected effective tax rate on adjusted ENC in order to help you better assess the year to come. Note that the guidance on EBITDA reflects the adoption of IFRS 16 and does not assume any recoveries from the upcoming arbitration process on the previously mentioned mining project. This concludes my presentation. We can now open the line for questions. Thank you.
We can open the line for questions. Operator?
Mr. Zussman, I'm really sorry. Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to ask for questions. And we will take our first question from Yuri Link. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'll ask the obvious question, Neil. Can you give us an update to the extent possible on 407 process?
The 407 process is going fine. It's a confidential piece. It continues to progress, and as soon as we've got some news, we'll let everybody know.
Okay. So no change to the timeline seems to have slipped. Can you give us any color on why that's happened?
No, it's a detailed process, and it needs to be done, properly. So it's progressing. It's progressing well from our perspective, and, we'll update everybody once that's done.
Okay. What would be the use of proceeds as you see it today? What would be the priorities?
Same as they were last quarter and the quarter before.
Okay. Just switching gears, what's the strategy right now within the company? Have you moved on from all hope of a remediation agreement, and are you carrying on as if this is going to go to trial and preparing for everything that entails?
Yeah, I mean, our innocent employees are being used as a puck in a political hockey game, and frankly, they don't deserve it. And we've had enough. So we are 100% concentrating now on defending ourselves in court. Unfortunately, if you look at the time involved, we're 6-7 years past the events of 2012. Highly likely that this is going to go on for another number of years. But frankly, we've had enough of all of that, and we're just going to vigorously defend ourselves in court. And that's our strategy.
Okay, do you look to focus your growth outside of the country as you go down that route, or carry on as usual and see what happens? Just curious as to what management and the board are thinking as we go forward here.
Well, I mean, we've got plenty of opportunities to grow the business outside of Canada. But we're committed to the Canadian, to the Canadian market and to our Canadian employees as well. So from that perspective, we're going to make sure that we defend ourselves through the court process, and we are pretty confident that in the end we will win through, and we'll continue to grow that will then give us the ability to grow the Canadian business the way that we should have been doing over the last 6 years.
Okay. I'll turn it over and get back in the queue. Thanks, Neil.
If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. And we will now take our next question from Mark Neville. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. If I could just ask a follow-up on the 407. Again, I appreciate the very detailed process, but just curious at this point if there's been any indicative offers, if this is really a pricing issue. I'm just curious if you can help us with that.
Well, it's a confidential process, so we'll update you once we are in a position to release that information.
Okay. Maybe just on free cash, for the earnings guidance for 2019, the $2 to $2.20, I think last call you spoke to a 70% conversion rate by 2020 or 2021. I'm just curious if that is still your expectation, sort of what to expect for free cash flow in 2019.
Yeah, so the 70% conversion out in 2020 and forward remains valid. I think there's a bit of adjustment you gotta make on that with the implementation of IFRS 16. It does change a bit of geography in the cash flow statement, but that's still on plan. As it relates to 19, we're obviously impacted quite a bit by the mining project. There is a significant cash outflow that will result from that. So that, we thought would be kind of trending towards that 70 little bit underneath the halfway point probably, and now that's, you know, with this cash outflow, we'll be below that. But we'll still be positive on a free cash flow conversion.
Okay. Maybe just on the dividend, just sort of the motivation around the cut. I do appreciate sort of where the balance sheet's at and the need to preserve cash, but just any thoughts on that? Is it really just the E&C business is just not generating enough to cover it right now? Just any thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think it goes to my earlier comment. I mean, the there's a couple of a little bit more than a couple hundred million dollars coming out on this mining project from a cash standpoint. So that hurts the free cash flow quite a bit. So the objective here was really to strengthen the balance sheet, reduce leverage, and protect the investment grade. So that's kind of where we're at. And we feel confident this is what it's going to give us. So.
Okay, if I can just maybe sneak one last one in. Just on the covenant, if I do some math, it looks like the add-backs to debt are about $500 million. Is that ballpark about right?
I'm sorry, what's the... Can you
just on the covenant calculation? Yeah, the covenant calculation, the 2.9x. I mean, to get there, it looks like there's about $500 million add-back to debt on my math. Is that about right?
I don't have a specific number. I mean, what you need to add back is some of the advances and so forth, and then you take the EBITDA, and you have to adjust for capital to make it more on a cash basis. So we'd have to come back to you, but if that's how you did it, that would be the number.
Okay. Thanks. I'll get back in queue.
Yeah, don't forget to adjust for the 310 of...
Yep.
Non-recurring.
Yep. All right. Okay, thanks.
We'll take our next question from Derek Sprong. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. Just on Ian Edwards, has he reviewed, the mining projects, but how about other fixed-price contracts in infrastructure? Have you done another review of your fixed-price contracts in infrastructure, and are there any potential concerns out there that you have? And again, I'd bring up the Champlain Bridge again in light of the fact that, we are in a bit of a different situation than we were a few quarters ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. And yeah, we have gone through the top more than 20 of our top contracts in terms of the work we do in this arena. We've gone through, we've done the peer reviews, we've done all the checks again to make sure that what we approved is what we signed, and that they are on track, and we don't have anything of any similar nature whatsoever, and we've concluded that exercise. We did that immediately. It took us about a week to do, but we've completed that exercise, and we can confirm that there's nothing of the same ilk in any of the sectors, not just the infrastructure sector.
Okay, that's great. And then another question, just on the remediation agreement. I mean, I understand that you're focused 100% on the trial now. The Canadian public prosecutor did say at the time that she wouldn't be inviting you to negotiate an agreement at this time. That was her words at this time. Is there still a chance that they could come back and offer a remediation agreement? Again, I understand that you're focused on the trial, but could the Canadian public prosecutor return and look to negotiate with you in the future? And then finally, once the full trial starts, presuming that the preliminary trial results in a full trial, does that then preclude you from negotiating a remediation agreement in the future, or could you, say, a year into the full trial, come back and negotiate a remediation agreement with the Canadian public prosecutor? Thank you.
You know, I think it's really clear, crystal clear, that the DPP has discretion to invite us in at any time. But that's at their discretion. If we were invited in, of course, of course we would, because that's basically been our priority. And we believe that whether it's before or during, the DPP does have that discretion. So, I mean, it's not really a question for us. I think the only thing that we really want to say is that, if we were ever invited, you know, in the future, then of course we would be a willing participant. But frankly, it doesn't look like that today. So what our employees want to hear is that we're moving on and we're going to defend them and the innocent employees through this process, and we are going to do that vigorously through the court system.
Okay, that's great. I'll turn it over. Thank you.
And we will take our next question from Jacob Boot. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Jacob.
Given all that's happened in the past 6 months, you know, what point do you look at a plan B or a plan C, for instance, either splitting up the company or selling certain divisions?
Well, I think we've mentioned before that we formed a committee of the board in terms of looking at alternatives. I mean, that's obviously a confidential process in terms of the details of all of that. But as we said before, we are constantly looking at our priority is maintaining and looking after shareholder value. And with that in mind, we continue to look at all of our, you know, all of the future opportunities.
You commented on the EDPM margins being quite strong, but revenues were down year on year for the quarter. What was the driver there?
I think last year we had quite strong activities, across the board, especially in the U.S. With the FEMA remediation work. So you had a bit of a downscale on that.
And then my last question here is, I guess there's some press out there about potential changes to the integrity regime. There might be some changes to the automatic 10-year suspension. You're aware of any of this and any comments?
Well, I mean, it's public information, so, I mean, you've got as much as we've got. Like I said, we just need to get on with the business of defending ourselves in court, and that's something for further down the line.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Benoit Poirier. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much, and good afternoon. Sylvain, could you provide maybe some color about the cash outlay expected Q1, Q2 with respect to the mining project?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's actually over $200 million both in Q1, Q2. I'd say the biggest piece in Q1. Yeah, over 200 cumulatively, and then you split that between Q1 and Q2.
Okay, perfect.
Just all of it in Q3.
Okay, and for Clean Power, I mean, you're ramping down one project and ramping up another one. The backlog has increased. Could you maybe mention more color about the path for profitability or what we should expect for Clean Power going forward?
Well, I think Clean Power, what you're going to see increasing and continuing is the Linxon activities. So I think we're very pleased with how the John Hart project went, and I think as we close the year, we start to ramp up some of the geographies of Linxon. It's gone really well. We still got a few more coming in online this quarter, so that'll be where you'll see the increased activity.
Okay, and last one for me, with respect to the potential contract oil and gas in Western Australia, obviously it's something to monitor, and that could be pretty sizable. So what's your level of confidence to reach an ability or maybe the next milestone for this particular project?
Well, I mean, that's you know, we're optimistic that we can support our customer in terms of developing this, but I mean, ultimately, you know, that's a customer decision in terms of the next phase and the economics and everything that go with it. But I mean, it looks like a good prospect.
Okay, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you.
And we will take our next question from Michael Tufom. Go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Sylvain, earlier when you were commenting on the leverage ratio calculated under the credit agreement versus your own calculations, I just wanted to confirm a couple things. So first of all, the credit agreement calculation that gets us 2.9 times, that does add back $310 million?
Yes. It treats 310 as a non-recurring. Absolutely.
Okay. And then I think there was, I missed it, but I think there was reference to some other adjustments to adjusted trailing EBITDA beyond simply that $310 million amount. Can you just go over what those other adjustments were?
At a high level, it's essentially you got to treat capital more on a cash basis. So you look at the dividends coming in. So you kind of remove some of the equity pickups and replace it by dividend or distributions. That's basically what you get. And we've disclosed this number because obviously we're getting a number of questions, and we'll continue to disclose that into the upcoming quarters.
Okay, got it. And then in terms of free cash flow, you mentioned that for the year it should be positive. Obviously, that sounds like the biggest drag this year is going to be the outflows from the mining project, which you've quantified. If we were to look at free cash flow excluding the drag from the mining project, would you have been or would you have expected to be somewhere around the same kind of halfway to that 70% conversion that you previously talked about?
Yeah. It'd be slightly better, actually, but, yeah.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. And then, Neil, I'm not sure if you can add anything to this, but you did mention that there was a special committee of the board formed to protect, you know, look at options to protect shareholder value and stakeholder value. Can you just talk about sort of how advanced that has become over the last couple of months in terms of any work that's been done? Like, have you hired advisors? Have they actually begun to sort of form some options, or is this still fairly early days?
I think the two questions, the answer is yes and yes. So, yes,
okay.
We've got advisors, and yes, they've started working.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. And then maybe just lastly, Sylvain, with respect to the mining and metallurgy segment, I realize it's going to be a lot smaller here than it was before with the shift out of EPC mining work. But in your 2019 guidance, are you assuming that whatever the mining and metallurgy segment contributes in 2019, is it contributing positive EBIT, or is there still a loss assumed in in the guidance you've given us?
It's thereabouts break even, I would say.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will take our next question from Devin Dodge. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I just wanted to come back to the decision to reduce the dividend. On the one hand, it seems prudent, just as it allows more cash to be directed towards debt repayment. But at the same time, you're looking to sell down your stake in the 407, which would potentially be a pretty significant deleveraging event. Just how should we be thinking about this? Just wondering if it's maybe is any change in the commitment to proceed with the 407 sale, or whether there's a timing difference in that transaction versus when you need the cash, or if the lenders, when you negotiated your covenant relief, whether they insisted on this. Just any color that would be helpful.
Yeah, well, it's not your last point, for sure. I think it's more like in any M&A process, there's uncertainty around the finalization, the timing, and all that. And I think when we look at, you know, where we're at and how, especially this level of cash out we're going to impact in the first half of the year. The fact we got downgraded by the rating by S&P, it felt like exactly what you said, the prudent thing to do. So.
Okay. And maybe on going to the oil and gas business, I recognize there's a lot of moving parts here, including increasing the focus on the North American market, but how should we be expecting, or what should we be expecting in terms of revenues for this business in 2019? I know in Q4, revenues were down about 40%. I don't suspect that is a good go-forward kind of revenue growth expectations, but just how should we be thinking about that in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, part of what's linked to that is we you know, as I said before, I mean, a large part of our revenues, you know, are in the Middle East, on top of what we're doing in North America. And a large part of that is within Saudi. I mean, we are completely and utterly committed to supporting our Saudi customers in terms of what they need and the value that we can bring. However, as we said before, that there is a degree of uncertainty around what we will be selected for. So that's why in the 2019 guidance we've actually taken down our expectations around the oil and gas, specifically around the Middle East, just in case. That turns out to be the fact. So it's a bit difficult to be any more precise at this time on that. But within our 2019 guidance, it includes taking out a degree of uncertainty around the oil and gas work that we do in the Middle East.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Okay, and then maybe just one last one. Just wondering if the strained relationship between Canada and Saudi Arabia. Obviously, it's impacted your ability to get work in Saudi Arabia, but has that also extended outside of the KSA?
No.
Okay, thank you.
We will take our next question from Chris Murray. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Neil, maybe just thinking about, you know, all the different moving parts we've got going into this year. You talked about walking away from certain portions of the mining business. And then I guess there's also been some commentary around your ability to bid on new work. How should we think about your ability to maintain your backlog through the year? And can you maybe give us an idea of where you think you still have opportunities to grow and maybe offset some of these losses? And I guess what I'm trying to think about is, do you have a reasonable expectation you can maintain at least a 1x book-to-bill ratio for the year?
Yeah, I mean, so to answer the question in the middle of that, first, we have absolutely no restrictions whatsoever on bidding and winning anything to do with Canadian government work, whether it's federal or provincial. We've got the agreement that was put in place earlier. That is maintained until the end of any form of court process, so we are not concerned with that at all. And the restrictions doesn't apply. I mean, that form of restriction doesn't apply anywhere else, because ultimately, you know, everywhere else in the world, I mean, basically they don't penalize you until you're found guilty. You know, they don't penalize you when you're still innocent. So, from that perspective, you know, we're free to bid on anything that we think is going to add value to our customer base and to our employees and to the company. And we're very, very confident around a number of prospects, both inside Canada and internationally. So, yeah, I mean, had a great Q4. We've got $14.9 billion, and I see absolutely no reason whatsoever why we will not continue to progress that from this point onwards.
All right. So you believe you actually have a reasonable shot at increasing the backlog year over year? Is that a fair way to characterize that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the only thing that we're at competitive disadvantage on is the fact that the, you know, this overhang continues to be there. And competitors in the U.S. are, you know, are pretty ruthless, and they use it against us. But even when they're using it against us, we continue to win through, and we win our fair share, and we expect that to continue.
Okay, fair enough. And then, Sylvain, maybe for you, just a question thinking about cash flow, and I know you've talked about, you know, some issues front end of the year. You're bringing the dividend down, still very conscious about your debt levels. But thinking about your investments in capital, and let's think about maybe outside the 407 for a moment. Does either the recent rating changes or maybe your ability to fund new investments, does that start to impact investments in new concessions as you move through 19 and maybe into 2020? And does that as well, on the other side, maybe change your perspective on the portfolio and maybe accelerating any potential sales?
Well, we have in the coming year, in 19, we do have a few project completions that we've accounted for in our budget into the investment, and we're fine with that. I think we're fully committed to that, and there's no issue there, so we'll continue on that. The as we look forward on projects, we see ourselves continuing to invest in concessions, so that's not something we consider a problem. Now, what when we created the Infrastructure Partners Fund, it was exactly to recycle our cash. Once invested in concession and concessions were stabilized, then we would put them into the fund. So I think that strategy is still valid, and there's no change to that. I think as in any time, good or bad, we would try to recycle that cash as soon as we could, basically. That's basically the purpose of this fund. So nothing's changed there either.
And your change in debt rating doesn't impact your ability to fund any of these transactions?
Not at this point. And I think some of, you know, the actions that we're taking now, including the dividend cuts, obviously to secure our balance sheet and investment grade. So I think we're in good shape for that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Maxim Sichel. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Sylvain, I just had a clarification question in terms of the comment around mining. So when you're making reference to $200 million drag, is that on, I guess, working capital, or was that on EBIT?
On cash. So the EBIT impact has been taken. And then as you complete the project, you basically have all your costs to go and your accounts payable to go out, essentially. So it's working capital. It's all working capital, essentially, because the loss has been taken. The project was a massive loss. So it's just going to...
Yeah. So I guess it's conceivable we're going to be sort of in the same position as in last year's H1, like the drag of kind of 439 for the consolidated entity, right, because we don't have the breakdowns on it by segment?
Well, you will see the big drag in Q1, Q2, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And then, so in terms of the mining, the question that I have, I mean, obviously, if you stop doing EPC-related work, how do you think about, matching the revenue and the headcount in that division on a prospective basis?
Well, I think we're going to concentrate very much on, you know, a lot of our bread and butter in the past, which is EPCM. So reimbursable or target cost EPCM work together with a sustaining capital that we have actually built up a nice competitive business within that area. So we are absolutely continuing with that. So to be clear, we're not exiting the sector. And we're also looking as well in terms of how we can potentially utilize resources wider from other sectors within that to make it a bit more competitive.
Okay. And then in terms of, do you mind maybe providing a bit of color in terms of where you see the opportunities right now in mining? Is it in LATAM? I mean, is it iron ore related, just so that we can get a better sense where you're tracking those potential contracts?
Yeah, I think most of it at the moment is either, the vast majority of the stuff that we're looking at the moment is really the bigger, wider Middle East. And it's, acid plants, some fertilizers, potentially gold projects, and there are also opportunities in the Middle East around aluminium. Aluminium smelters and work that we have done, really successfully in the past. There's opportunities to sort of re-engage and work on some brownfield prospects.
Okay, and it's fair to assume it's going to be outside of the KSA, right, Neil?
No, not necessarily. Like we said, I mean, we want to support our customers in KSA. We would like to carry on across, not just oil and gas, but across all of our businesses in infrastructure and rail and mining and KSA. But our decision is with the individual customers. But we intend to, and we have been engaging with them. I mean, I was in Saudi twice last week. And we want to, we want to continue to do the work there.
Okay. And the diplomatic sort of spat right now, that would not preclude you from participating in those contracts on the mining side?
Well, that's up to the individual customers. But we're not going to take that for given and give up. And that was the reason why I was there twice last week.
Right. Okay. No. Fair enough. And so again, just to clarify, for mining. Sylvain, you were talking about what's called break-even EBIT for the year, correct?
Right, yep.
And then, Neil, if we don't mind going back to oil and gas, you're talking about improving EBIT for the entirety of 2019 versus 18. Do you mind maybe talking about the buckets where you're tracking, potential contracts and what gives you the confidence you're going to be able to drive the profitability higher this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the our prospects list. I mean, we've got a large hopper in terms of potential prospects, and they are pretty consistent with last year. So a lot of it across the wider Middle East, some emerging prospects in Australia. And North America, especially, well, they're onshore North America, both in terms of upstream, downstream, midstream areas. The only, like you said, we've taken a more cautious approach for oil and gas built into our 2019 guidance, recognizing the fact that in Saudi Arabia, the oil and gas prospects are, not in our control. We will continue to bid there, but ultimately, we just want to be cautious about the outlook on that.
Okay, fair enough. And then maybe if we can just circle back lastly to the Plan B sort of discussion. Is there, I guess, two-part question. One of them is options, I guess, are being considered, if you can discuss any. And then if there is a time frame by which you will decide to disclose what exactly you think is the right way to protect shareholder value.
Yeah, I understand the curiosity, but it is a confidential process. So, when the committee and the board are in a position to disclose some of that, then obviously we will. But until then, I can't really comment on it.
And sorry, Neil, but in terms of timing, is this a 2019 event or it's kind of a moving target, just trying to understand that dynamic better.
Well, I think it's got to be linked with everything else that's going on. So, like we said, we're going to defend ourselves against the charges, and we need to make sure that whatever we do minimizes or eliminates the effect should the worst come to the worst, which we don't believe it actually will, but it's very much linked to that.
Okay. All right, well, that's it for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Felicia Frederick. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just had a question surrounding the working capital, and I was just wondering how much working capital was tied up in the Champlain Bridge project and the two projects in South America, the two mining projects.
Yeah, we don't disclose the details of that, but it's clear that the Champlain project, with the delays and disruption that we had, we could not achieve some of the milestones that were linked to the some of the last remaining step of the construction, namely the putting the asphalt and so forth. So that's caused a cash pressure in our results in 18. So we're anticipating those to come back, in the first half of 19. I think as it relates to your mining question, like I said, I mean, it's that over $200 million cash out expected in the first half. So this is only one project, right, in mining.
Right, okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes today's question and answer session. Mr. Denis Jasmin, at this time, I will turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us today. If you have any further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Have a nice afternoon and a good weekend. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's call. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.